This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 16. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, Garrus. Welcome to the show, Berners. You're live at a match today, Garrus.
I certainly am, yeah. We're actually not one over in. We are now one over in. There you go. That's the end of the first over. It's one for none, Exeter University of batting, and my boys are having a bowl.
Lovely job. And I guess the first thing that we have to talk about before we get into anything else is a certain Mr. Chris Gayle, who this week did something incredible. Yeah, he bashed 175 in a 260-odd total in a 20-over match. That's pretty good going, isn't it?
I like the fact that when he got to his 100, they were on 123. That was that was high quality. That I enjoyed it a lot.
Kohli was just knocking a single and watching the fun, wasn't he?
Yeah, but good on him for being able to knock a single and stand at the other end. I thought that was... That was good batting in its own self. But, I mean, it was amazing, wasn't it? And I suppose we're not surprised, because if there's one player in the world that could do that, then it would be him.
It was amazing to watch. It was like watching highlight. It was like watching the highlights of a game. It wasn't like watching an actual game going on. You take your eyes off it for one ball and he'd smashed another six.
You know, the incredible part, I think, though, is that if you get, say, like psychologically, you know, getting 100 in a T20 game is pretty... You know, it's pretty dynamic in its own right. But then to get to 100 and then go and score another 75 runs on top of that, that's incredible, isn't it? No one's going to beat that for time.
I agree with that. I don't think anybody will beat it for a while unless he does it again, I suppose.
there's an element of luck whenever you say score, I would say, more than 60 in a T20 game, that you've ridden your luck, you've probably at times gone over the top of fielders that are stood on the boundary, which, you know, if you get fractionally wrong, you're out. So to be able to go on and score at that rate and that number of balls is... Someone give me some oxygen.
I mean, it's a good place to bat, isn't it? You know, we know that. It's a good place to bat because it's always been a high run scoring ground. In fact, it was the venue of Ireland beating England in the World Cup, where Kevin O'Brien did his wonderful innings, you know, smacking it out of the park. So it is a good place to score big, because the ball travels well. It's quite a small ground. The wicket's very, very good. But, you know, it didn't matter whether you're on a small ground or not, because most of the sixes that I watched on the highlights last night were going 15, 20 rows back, not just creeping over.
And he has a method, doesn't he? He has a method that just works for him in a way that is quite unique to him. You know, he's a big guy; he can hit it hard. Technically, you can pick plenty of holes in his technique if you want to, but it doesn't matter if you're hitting 30 ball hundreds, does it?
Yeah, I don't know whether you can really pick many holes in his technique. And the reason why I say that is that he keeps it very simple, doesn't he? And you know, it's simple and it's repeatable, and that's exactly what you want to see with any batter, really. So he stands really still, he establishes a decent base, he hits through the line of a ball. I mean, that's pretty good batting. In the same way as, you know, Marcus Trescothick, it was pretty good batting. Obviously in test matches, when there's men behind the wicket and the ball's nipping about a bit, then, you know, he can become a little bit more vulnerable. But in that format there, I would say it's very good technique. It's his, I admit that, and you wouldn't want everybody to copy it. Mm. But equally, the sound principles of being still at contact and hitting through the line of a cricket ball, he does very, very well.
He is famous for being completely calm and relaxed in all situations as well. And that, you know, that's got to help your game, hasn't it? When it doesn't matter what's going on, you're still thinking to yourself, well, I'm just going to hit this next one for six.
He is a cracker. That is for sure. He's a tremendous fella as well, and always got a little smile on his face and a glint in his eye and with everything that he's doing. And, always somebody that I enjoyed having time around, I must say.
Yeah, he makes it look easy. And if it wasn't such an incredible feat, then you'd think it was a lot easier than it is.
Definitely.
He makes it look so easy. But taking it down to level to people maybe who aren't quite so gifted with a bat or a ball, for a lot of people it's the start of a season, especially if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, the season will be kicking off in a week, or maybe it's already started for you. And I wanted to talk about the issue of seriousness and taking things seriously, because there's definitely a dichotomy in amateur cricket between people who play for enjoyment and people who play to progress and to improve. And there's often a conflict in that area, and you see people in the same side. It could be quite a high standard of amateur cricket and they're in the same team, but some of the guys are playing for the fun of it and the enjoyment of it, and other guys are playing to progress. So that presents a challenge, I think, to how you coach and how you captain players in those kind of situations. Have you come across that situation, Gareth?
Yeah, I have, but and I don't know whether I go about it particularly well, to be brutally honest with you, because I'm a big believer. It doesn't matter whether you're playing recreationally or whether you're playing to get better. You still want to contribute, don't you? And, you know, and there are different ways to contribute. Obviously, we acknowledge that, but you still want to contribute. So whenever I run a cricket session, whilst I might be driven with certain players more so than other players, I'll still hope to get some improvement out of players, because I think you end up enjoying it a little bit more if you can contribute that a little bit more as well. So it's something that I've had when I've, you know, for example, when I coached Chard Cricket Club a couple of years ago, you know, we had guys, everybody wanted to win, but obviously the motivations were slightly different. But I think the more that you look to try and continually develop, even if you are a guy who bats at number 10 and just fields, well, you know, let's give you a bit more enjoyment by making you a better catcher of the ball. Surely you're going to have more of a smile on your face if you pick up a couple of catches on Saturday rather than clang a couple. So that's my view. It may be completely different to everybody else that coaches in club cricket and in schools around the world. But my view is that everybody wants to get a little bit better so they can contribute a little bit more.
What's your view, Berners? Because I guess you are representing the more recreational side of the recreational cricketer.
I think at this time of the year, it's quite focused and everyone's got that bit of spark and zip about them. It's midway through the season when you start getting a few fatalities, isn't it? Holidays and Wimbledon starts and it gets a bit hot or it gets a bit rainy. And I find it changes. It's quite transitional, certainly where I play. Me personally, yeah. Not too sure, coach.
I mean, do you say, for example, nets? How do you go about nets? Do you think to yourself, oh well, you know, it's a thing that I just can't be thinking about at the moment. I'll just turn up to the games and enjoy myself.
Well, me personally, I don't enjoy myself too much with any form of sport if I'm not doing well. So, for me, training and being involved on that side of things is purely performance orientated. I wouldn't say that I enjoy training. I would say that I train and try to look at as many balls in the week, because I know that if I go out on a Saturday and get out cheaply or play a bad shot, that inevitably I'm going to ruin my Saturday, and I don't really want to do that. So I do try to give myself a chance to actually be successful, because I know that even if I play with a great set of guys, that cricket's quite a long day, 6-7 hours. And if you don't do too well, you know, is it really that much fun? I mean, they're not that great of guys. They're kind of good guys, but not kind of great guys when you get a duck, pay 10 quid and it starts raining at 7 o'clock just when you want to go out and it's finished. I think there are players that probably do actually just enjoy being in a social environment and be able to play a game of some description.
Yeah, I can only speak from personal experience, but I know when I played club cricket that my post-match beer or cider always tasted better when we won.
Yeah.
And I think your success within all of that would come when you've got a nucleus of players that are all singing from the hymn sheet. You know, if you're all laid back, don't really care, and that's the way you want to do it, you might well still be successful, because that's just, you know, the team might galvanise from that viewpoint. if you've all got drive, you're all training, you're all firing to get out for a warm-up prior to a game, that's probably also good, because I often look around the team and I always think, well, I can see straight away body language or just, you know, comments that someone's made to me. I think, well, we're going to play today and four of the blokes aren't at the races. You know, don't rely on them for anything. They're not going to get any runs or get any wickets. So if someone's going to win this game today, it's got to be me, him, him or him. Well, those three have just got out. So now it's me or him. Oh, dear, we're up, you know, up the creek here now, because we've basically got seven blokes that wanted to win and the others were just kind of passengers. That obviously varies game to game as well.
Yeah, it does. And that is a source of conflict in a lot of sides, where you've got the guys who turn up to practice every week and train hard and do what they can to improve themselves. And then you've got the guys who say, well, yeah, I'd like to practice, but the problem is, you know, I've got this and this on, and, you know, I give up my Saturday and that's all I can manage. And both sides find it difficult to see the other side, and there isn't really a compromise.
Well, I think it comes more to the onus of a club and the vision of a club, doesn't it, and what they're trying to achieve as well. Because, you know, I've been to a couple of clubs that have talked a good game and, yeah, we want to progress. And in a short space of time, we've turned an environment from a, you know, some people practice, some people don't, which is what you describe,
yeah,
into a, you know, Wednesday night practice night was a, you know, was a, everybody was there and everybody was expected to be there and they turned up, and also they stayed on and had a drink in the bar with everybody afterwards. And then equally on Saturdays, you'd play the game and you'd stay in the bar afterwards. And that culture became very easy to put in, even just by everybody having, or, you know, the higher echelons of the club having the same focus as the players. I think where the problem comes is where you've got, you know, as you say, five or six players that maybe are really, really driven, yet the actual club isn't geared towards success or isn't geared towards doing things properly. And I've always found that when I'm working with a club that has a vision, we can turn it around quite well. And whether people usually don't practice, you'll find that they'll start pitching up to practice and you'll get 20 strong practice sessions every Wednesday, as long as the club are behind you in what you're trying to do. You know, and we had loads of recreational cricketers, but it just became part of their habit, I suppose, and that really helped us to achieve some great things.
Okay, and we're going to come back to the club game a little bit later on in the question section, but for now we're going to finish off this section by having the yes no round, which is three questions, and Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to them, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Berners, you've got the yes no round questions, fire away.
First question, fielding is a team skill more than an individual skill?
Yes.
No.
Question two, Australia's bowling will win the Ashes?
No.
No.
Third question, county cricket can coexist with the IPL?
No.
No.
Time for the questions round, and every week we have a couple of questions which are emailed in or phoned in to us, and we answer those questions, and the best one wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com. That's chosen by Gareth at the end of the show, so keep listening if your question's in there. So, Berners, you've got the two questions for this week's show. What's the first one?
Indeed, our first question comes in from Bilal, and he's asking, as a spinner, how does he confuse the batsman and also put pressure on him? If you're bowling to me, Bilal, I can tell you that I will do that for you. But let's hear what these guys have to say.
Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of batsmen do put pressure on themselves, especially against spinners, don't they? You know, they there's no pace on the ball, so they think, I better put this one out of the park after facing four dot balls. I've seen that a few times. So I think one of the key things to putting pressure on a batsman is not giving him an easy way to get away and to score runs and rotate the strike, and to have him sit there patting the ball back as much as you can and setting your field effectively and then bowling effectively to that field, no matter what your style of bowling. And there's so many different style of spin bowling. It can vary quite a lot. You don't need a million variations and great dip and control of flight and all those different things which are useful to have, but I think control of where the ball pitches and understanding what a batsman is trying to do and then cutting that off is the first step on keeping the bat pressure on the batsman.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's various ways to put pressure on the batters. As you say, it's very individual to different bowlers, depending on what their armoury is, I suppose, you know, and what they've got up their sleeve. But one of the things that's constant for building pressure, irrespective of whether you spin it in out, or got a doozer or an arm ball or whatever, is field placings. And I think it's really crucial that if you get your field right for your particular bowling type, and give yourself the best chance of getting the right fielders in the right place in those high volume places, then you're going to create pressure anyway. As you say, there's not a lot of pace on the ball. Get your right fielders in the right places, get your field set properly, and you will build that pressure over time. If then you have got variation or you vary your pace, then that adds even more pressure because people can't line you up. Making sure that you bowl at the right end, making sure that people are hitting into the wind. All of these things build pressure on batters. So as well as having top spinners, doozers and all manner of different things, it's good just to have that basic game plan of what am I trying to bowl, what field do I need to bowl it to, what conditions like wind do I need to factor into the way that I'm setting up my field, and away you go. And you'll find that you build up pressure on the batter over a period of time and get some wickets.
Understanding what the batsman is trying to do is also really important in that area as well, because different batsmen will have different ways of attacking you. Some will want to move their feet, get down the track and hit you straight, while others will think, well, I can score runs by the different types of sweeps that I've got available to me. So if you know a batsman, or you're very quick at being able to work out a batsman, and then you can put that plan into action quickly, that's going to be a big benefit to you as well, because putting a ball on a length on off stump to a batsman who sweeps compared to a batsman who uses his feet, it's going to be two different things.
Yeah, it is, and that's where we're lucky, aren't we? Because a lot of our cricket that we play, we play it against the same teams year on year, pretty much. You know, once you're in a league, you play against guys. So it's worth, and I think we've mentioned this before, but it's worth making a note, isn't it, of every team and every player. Just a little, very brief note, couple of lines on each player to know where their scoring areas are or where they're aiming to go. And then when you come round to playing against them the following year or later in the season, then you can make that appropriate adjustment and put them under pressure again. Because as soon as they walk into bat next time round and you've got their high boundary area cut off, they're going to be putting themselves under pressure, because that's the nature of the way that we work. So making those notes, understanding what that person's trying to do, but more importantly, being prepared for that. Once you've played against them once, they'd have given you enough information that you can put things into place, and then you'll find that you put them under pressure yet again.
Confusing is quite an interesting word as well, because that is something that you relate to spin bowling, and especially the type of spinner who can use deception to get wickets. And that's where you're talking about flight and you're talking about dip. You're talking about getting the ball above the eye line. That's a very common piece of coaching advice, often misused, but it's a solid piece of coaching advice. What would you say about confusing a batsman or putting a batsman off by making the ball pitch where he doesn't think it's going to pitch, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, the crucial thing is to be able to spin it, isn't it? Because all of those things that you've just talked about, you know, the dip, the drift, the flight, all come from you putting big revs on the ball. So make sure your grip's right. Make sure you're spinning the thing predominantly with the right finger. And really give it a good hard rip, and you'll create those bits of deception. The bowlers that don't rip the ball, or don't really put revolutions on the ball, are having to rely on bowling a bit flatter, not getting it above the eye line, as you said. And their level of deception then is reduced as a result. So first thing you try to do with any player, whether they be young or old or whatever, is just make sure that they're spinning it hard, because all of those areas, that dip, that flight, come from that.
Our next question comes in from AB. Not sure whether he's South African, but what is the optimum structure for an amateur cricket club? One Saturday team, three, four, a Sunday team, a midweek team, separate squads for each, or the same group of players, a junior section? How old and how many different age groups should you have? So AB sounds like he's starting his own franchise.
Well, this may be an unanswerable, it depends type question. I'm not sure where we'll go with this Gareth Bedeau? If we're talking about a dream club, where do you start?
You start with the youth. You start with the youth section, mate. With a group of people that you know you've got that number of people. So you go to your primary schools, you build up links with your primary schools, and you start from the youth and then build it up, because the more players you get coming in at the bottom, there will be some natural wastage, because people always move away from the game, particularly around the ages of 16 17 18, when other things come into play, and they don't necessarily want to give up 6 hours on a Saturday to play cricket. But you start off with the kids, get into the primary schools, get them along to the cricket club, invest in your coaches, and you'll build up a huge base of players, which you'll maintain over the course of the years. And then really, because it's all, you know, the numbers of 11s are down to the number of players that you've got within your club, isn't it? And that's a crucial thing. So every good club to me, and I know that Burners is involved in one of those clubs, starts off their program by really building from the bottom, by getting coaches in to go into schools, to build up the links, get the kids in. And then you'll find that you'll start developing 11s and senior 11s, you know, within 5 or 6 years, because there will be more demand for cricket.
There is a, like you say, Gareth, there is a period of time where players are more likely to drop out. They start playing adult cricket more regularly. Is there a case for some kind of a bridge from the junior game to the senior game?
Well, there is, but I think all the research, and when I was over in Ireland, I was lucky enough to be involved in one of these research projects, and it wasn't just about cricket, it was about all sports, making sure that the sport format fits the demographic. So around the age of 16 to 18, obviously your high flyers will be playing adult cricket and be playing every Saturday because they really want to be competing and progressing. But you'll get a lot of guys that don't want to give up 6 hours. So therefore, can you create, you know, a 3-hour game? Can you play 20-20 cricket for that group of players instead of playing, a 6-hour game to retain their interest? And we did it across a load of different sports. So golf had a look at some different opportunities for people to play a 1-hour round as opposed to a 3.5-hour round, because the same things affect all different sports. People don't really want to be giving up a heap of time if they're not massively interested in progressing up the player pathway. So that's crucial, mate. And I think in cricket, we're getting better at it. So the last man stand in England, that as a concept is a really, really good concept to keep people retained within the game, whereas a 6-hour game would put them off. And I think the more we think along those lines, what's our demographic want, or that particular demographic want, what format of cricket will best support that particular demographic? And then if we do that, we won't go too far wrong.
And of course, it varies where you are in the world as well, because what we've been talking about there is quite an English, British-centric way of looking at things. If you're running a cricket club in India, that's going to be a different set of circumstances.
So I can't really answer that, but the bottom line is it's got to start with your youth, that's your captive audience, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the people who are going to continue the game once the current crop of players, senior players, is finished. And that is always going to be the same wherever you are in the world. That's very true. I guess the other thing you have to think about is the amount of resources you've got available in terms of coaching as well. Because if you've got a lot of young players and not a lot of coaches, then that's a different challenge compared to having plenty of coaches and not many youngsters.
Yeah, and I think that is actually where the difference between a country such as England or an Australia and a country such as India is, because the coach education systems in both of the Australia and England are obviously more mature than the ones in India. So that is a challenge, and that's why we see a lot of people in India having to play cricket, you know, in anywhere, as opposed to actually as part of a cricket club. And you're right, it's down to coaching numbers. Obviously, as people get older, they don't require coaches necessarily at senior level, and are quite happy to go about things themselves. And then it comes down to facilities, and most cricket clubs have have only got one ground, haven't they? So that limits the amount of 11. So that's why it's really useful to get in with any local cricket club or any local recreational fields agency or whatever the case may be, to be able to open up fields to give all of your players regular cricket, irrespective of whether the first team or the second team are playing at home or not.
And that's especially true in India, is the grounds are at a very large premium compared to the number of people who are trying to play cricket. You can see that if you go to any large area of grass, pretty much anywhere in India, there's several games going on at the same time.
There are, the overlapping boundaries, and at the Maiden Oval in Mumbai, which is where I spend a lot of time. How people don't get seriously hurt, I don't know, because they
probably do.
They're playing games of cricket sort of 10 yards away from each other with batters swinging as hard as they can and, making really good contact with the ball, yet there doesn't seem to be too much bloodshed over the course of a day. But absolutely right. If you want proper games of cricket, then it's important that you do have a little bit of space. Any links that you can get, whether it be in India or Pakistan or anywhere, with areas of land that you can convert into cricket pitches by using, matting or whatever the case may be, helps to develop cricketers and helps to keep our brilliant game thriving.
So what we're saying is, often it depends, but we definitely want to have some young players around, starting it well as. You can go as young as six, I suppose, but you definitely want them to be primary school age, up to the age of about 11 or 12 starting out, and then working through an age group up to about 16, and then you're looking at more senior versions of the game, whether that's a 2020 to start with, or a Sunday game where you're playing 40 overs, and then probably league cricket, if you can find a way into league cricket where you've got a couple of sides at least playing in competitive cricket with adult players, a combination of guys who are taking it a little bit more seriously and guys, as we discussed earlier in the show, who are doing it for fun. How's that for a summary?
That's a very good summary. I like that, mate. You've done that well.
It will vary a lot. I know Berners, the club you play at, seems to have vast number of young players and several adult teams.
Yeah, it's a bit of a production line at the moment. We've had three players signed into the professional game in the last 2 years, so they're doing something right up there. But yeah, having a bit of infrastructure, good coaching, good facilities, we're in a good location, obviously West London, so it's a breeding ground for success, because it's the old force in numbers thing. If you've got a lot of human resources to choose from, you're naturally going to be able to put better teams out. If you're out in the sticks and you can barely get 11, then two go on holiday, it's no surprise that they're playing in the sixth, seventh division of their league. So I guess it's a lot to do with London, but then again, there are other teams we play against that are also in high traffic areas that just don't have quite the right recipe, I guess, and players come and go and shift about and aren't quite so successful. But good old Ealing will be going for our London Championship quest again this season. And also, I think they're playing in the National, but they've got Mould and Wanderers in the first game. They're a good team from Surrey. So it all starts here, I guess.
And most of your players come through the development system. They start young and they come through the system.
Unbelievably, yes. You'd think that a team that's so successful and it does have terrific facilities that you would just attract people from other clubs, but they tend to come and don't really last too long because there's a very strong bond there between the youngsters that have grown up there, and they're the ones that are really carrying or sailing the ship through at the moment. I think the captain, vice-captain, at least the top five are all Ealing boys and have all been brought up round here. So, yeah, it's a great model. Soapbox time, and in the seat today is our beloved coach. Off you go, you've got 1 minute of madness.
I don't know how relevant this is to cricket, but it did come from cricket, and I'm going to talk about the dangers of arguing on the internet. Recently, something happened at my club where some information was posted online, and somebody decided that they wanted to use that facility to criticize, to make a criticism. And it was a criticism of me. I'm not a perfect person. I know that I make mistakes sometimes, and I'm quite happy to discuss my decisions and these kind of things. But I don't really appreciate it when somebody puts up a passive-aggressive note onto Facebook about something that they're not happy about. I'd much rather them come to me and we can talk about it and we can talk it through rather than shouting at each other through an online forum that everybody can see, because you just both end up looking like idiots, and that's no way to do things in a recreational sport.
They think of it.
Right, that's all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we need to decide our winner of this week's prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Bilal's question about confusing batsmen and putting pressure on him, and we had AB's question about the optimum structure of a cricket club. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I really liked the cricket club one, actually. I thought that was an unusual question for us and a good question. So, so we'll go with that one. And that was Bilal, wasn't it?
AB, that was. AB.
Oh, sorry, AB. Apologies. No, I thought that was a really good question. Well done.
It was. And when I saw it, I thought that's going to be a tough one to answer. But I think we managed to do it one way or another, even if we didn't do it complete justice, but we probably need another couple of hours to do that. So congratulations, AB. Now, Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and ask their question, what would they need to do?
They can drop us an email. It's coach@pitchvision.com, or can give us a call, leave us a message. It's 0208 167 691.
Yes, indeed. And you can also find us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and our Facebook page is getting increasingly busy with lots of people looking at the videos there and posting questions. So head over there if you want to have a look at what's going on the Facebook page, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. If you want to subscribe to the show, to this wonderful weekly cricket podcast, then you can head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the instructions on what to do next. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, Coach.
Cheers, guys.